Hello?
Hello, hello?
Hello, is this Taylor?
Yes,
Hi,
Ian?
Taylor. It's Ian.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, sorry I'm a little late.
Oh, it's okay. It was an excuse for me to run and grab a coffee.
All right, perfect.
Which, I'll take that excuse like 5 times a day, and I do.
Fair enough. Sounds like radio.
Yeah, you know the drill. Actually, you know it much more. You guys do it is it three hours every night?
That's right, yeah. 3 hours a night, 7 nights a week. I do used to do 6 nights, now I'm doing 5. But yeah.
That is a lot.
Well, we love what we do, so it's all good.
Yeah. And you do calls now sometimes, and other times it's no calls is kind of the deal?
Open phones all the time, but believe it or not, doing a nationally syndicated radio show, you still got no calls a lot of the time. So yeah, if we have calls, we'll take them, but yeah, we're at the Free Talk Live is an open phone show every night.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So I'm recording two versions on my end. Are you able to record on your end and send me your piece and then I can stick them together?
Yep, I can. Although right, cool. Skype sounds pretty good in general, but yeah,
it does. And you know, once I get it, I mean, I might just decide to just use the version I have that has both of us on it. Usually it ends up being as if there's ever a time where like you are saying something awesome and I'm like starting to step over you and I'm like, why did I do that?
Those are
the moments where it can be very helpful to be able to separate the two. But
well, I don't have separate tracks here anyway, but so I mean, whatever you get from me is going to have us both mixed in as well.
Oh, well, in that case, don't even worry about it. I'll just record my end. Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Okay, cool. So did you just get back from Austin? Did I see that?
Like a week ago.
Cool.
Week or two.
I was in Austin years ago. It was fun.
It's a neat city. I don't mind visiting cities. I don't want to live there, though.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
The traffic sucks.
Yep.
And it was the worst during South by Southwest. It doesn't get worse than that in Austin.
Yeah. Well, and plus with all the package stuff that was going on, I bet that made things weirder.
Yeah, I actually didn't even go into downtown. I wasn't there for South by Southwest. I went to a crypto arts festival.
Cool. Okay, well, let me get started just so we can get through what I've got here. So a little bit about the story that I'm working on for background. So this story is part of a series that we do called Only in New Hampshire, where people can send in questions and then we answer them. And we've gotten a couple about the Free State Project. One of them was like just angry and weird. We're going with the one that's basically like, what is the Free State Project and how has it influenced the state? And so what we're aiming to do is, in a lot of ways, we're not going to be breaking any news because there's not any real news to break, but sort of to try and do a little bit of a comprehensive history and sort of understand, like, you know, now that it's been this many years, sort of what the heck is it? Because there's a lot of people, I think our staff and the creative production unit that I work on, I think probably about 70% is pretty new to New Hampshire in the past couple of years.
Okay.
And so it's really interesting for me, who grew up in Keene. And even there was like a lot that I've learned up until this point that I realized I didn't quite know, or I didn't really know the details.
Sure.
And yet, you know, folks who are just coming into it, I mean, they've got this like real splintered series of like, just like little bits and pieces of information that together don't amount to much at all.
Right. You were here during the 420s, weren't you?
I was, and I lived right downtown.
Okay. Right on.
And you know, I used to, well, I still do smoke a little bit, but I used to, I used to smoke cigarettes a lot.
Yeah.
And so I was constantly like just hanging out in front of my apartment building. I was across from, the Martini Bar. Oh, what the hell is it called?
Nick's?
No. Jeez, what?
I don't know. Offhand, blanking. I can't think of it.
Well, anyway, I was on.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I was like, I was technically overlooking Roxbury Street, but my entrance was like right on the square. So I would often be hanging out, and you know, I would sort of like see weird interactions that at first I was like, what's happening? And then I'd be like, oh, I know what's going on. Or in the case of the 420 stuff. Yeah. But let's just start with sort of the beginning in terms of the background with you, like. Because did you move for the Free State Project, or were you already sort of here and then kind of involved?
I did move for the Free State Project back in 2006, so I was one of the early movers in that case. And I moved up from Sarasota, Florida, which is where I was born and raised and spent 26 years of my life.
Hey, I used to go to Sarasota. My grandparents used to live there.
Lots of people's grandparents lived there.
So tell me a little bit about, like, where were you before? How old were you, and, like, what got you into the Free State Project? Like, you know, what led you to be like, yeah, I'm signing on?
I was a libertarian activist in Florida with the Libertarian Party, and did a lot of outreach down there, and was involved, you know, in as much stuff as I could have been. And so when I heard the idea of libertarians combining their efforts in one place, I thought, yeah, that's going to work a lot better, because libertarians are pretty much marginalized and ignored everywhere else they are. And so, yeah, why not gather together with others? And so I probably heard about that in around 2002, was doing my radio show right around that time, Free Talk Live, nationally syndicated show. And then, you know, just decided, it took me a while to agree to it, but after about a year of thinking it over, I think I finally decided, yeah, I definitely want to do this.
Yeah, it's a big move. I mean, climate-wise and just generally number of miles. I mean, were you like not – how enthusiastic were you about New Hampshire?
Well, in the beginning, it wasn't New Hampshire. There were 10 candidate states, and there was a vote of the first 5,000 members on the state. New Hampshire won overwhelmingly, and it was my first choice as well. The people who – there were certain people who were for each state, and they all kind of made their pitch, their best pitch as to why people should vote for their state. And New Hampshire's pitch was by far and away clearly the best. They came up with 101 reasons why people should, libertarians should choose New Hampshire. And that same list today actually has been made into a documentary film, which I'm one of the co-producers of. It's called 101reasonsfilm.com. It's the 101 reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire. And so it was very persuasive. New Hampshire was clearly the winner, and the other voters also agreed, and it won overwhelmingly.
And so you were doing the radio thing before you even came. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. I've been on the radio since I was 17, I think. Down in Florida.
Like, was it like a college station that you started on?
No, I started at what was eventually the Clear Channel cluster down there. It was owned by a different company prior to that, as an intern. And so, you know, I would drive the station van out to remotes and, you know, set up the remote and hang the banners and do all that stuff. And that's how I got started. And then maybe about 6 to 9 months later, they gave me an on-air internship, and the rest is history.
So, are they like political in nature, or did you sort of like bring that in?
It was actually a rock radio station, so where I started. And then eventually, after a few years, they flipped the format to talk radio on FM. And after about a year of that, I pitched to management, hey, it would be really cool if we had like a local show on this talk station, because they didn't have anything. And I was willing to do it for free, as were my co-hosts. So we did that, and they said yes.
And was that Free Talk Live from the very beginning?
Yep, it sure was. And then that station fired me at some point. Well, they let me go. I got 4 weeks severance, which was pretty sweet. And they didn't own the so-called intellectual property of Free Talk Live, so I took that with me.
And so, like, you were already a libertarian activist, but like, how did you get into libertarianism? I mean, like, was it stuff that you were thinking about from high school?
I smoked pot when I was 16 years old, and I think that probably opened my mind to the idea that the government was lying to me about things, and it turns out they lie about a lot of stuff.
And like, did that pretty quickly transition to political stuff, or was it like slow thing?
I mean, my dad had always listened to talk radio, so I was certainly familiar with talk radio at that time. And, of course, there weren't very many libertarians represented on talk radio. And most talk radio shows were very closed kind of format. You know, the talk show host would obviously only take calls from certain people they wanted to hear from, you know, or people with specific viewpoints. And so I wanted to create a talk show that was, you know, from a libertarian perspective, but also open to anybody to call in and express themselves. So that's how Free Talk Live got started.
And What'd you get fired for, if you don't mind me asking? Was it like...
It wasn't a firing. It was a severance thing. So it was one of those things where I was a board operator and on-air personality and was probably getting paid more than they could have brought a teenager in to do the same board op job for. So it's like, okay, well, here's 4 weeks severance. Thanks. Have a nice day. Gotcha. So it wasn't the same thing as like you did something bad, you're fired. It was like, well, we're just going to bring somebody else in here. It'll work for less. One of those kind of corporate decisions, which was great because then I was set free to do my own thing.
Yeah. And were you, I mean, you said you were sort of a libertarian activist. Were you more a Definitely. Member of the Libertarian Party itself before you came to New Hampshire for the Free State Project?
I was pretty burned out on the Libertarian Party, but yes, I was a Libertarian Party member, one of the key activists in Sarasota, Florida. I mean, I don't mind tooting my own horn on that. It's definitely the truth. I was the one who was creating all of the outreach opportunities. I would, pay for the booth at the county fair, at Gay and Lesbian Pride Fest, at the gun show. So, just going out there and kind of getting the word out about libertarianism and freedom. I've been doing that for a long time.
And what burnt you out? What were you feeling?
It's hard to get involved with the Libertarian Party. With political parties in general, they're frustrating organizations. They all have their factions and their infighting. And of course, the Libertarians were never successful at doing anything politically down there. So eventually, once I found the Free State Project, that was sort of shifted my perspective. Was like, okay, well, I'll promote this instead. And so I was promoting that idea.
Gotcha. In terms of like coming, did you move first to Keene? Were you right to Keene?
Yes. Yeah, I was inspired to move to Keene by some of the earliest movers to Keene, people like Russell Canning and Dave Ridley, people who were, Lauren Canario, people who were getting out there and in the streets, and there was video of them being arrested for things like civil disobedience. And I just thought, wow, that is so exciting and so much more interesting than what had been happening with, let's say, the Libertarian Party, which, of course, they in Florida would run candidates every 4 years, and that would be pretty much all they would do. Yeah, people in the streets doing things was very, very interesting, and I wanted to be there to not just be part of that, but also cover it and talk about it on the radio. And of course, I have video editing experience, so I could make videos of it as well.
And coming in, how did you see your role and find your role, within the activism there?
Good question. It's a small group. So, I mean, it was small back then. It's not a whole lot bigger today. It's bigger, but not a lot. I would say that you just kind of, you get to know people. You do whatever you feel comfortable with. And in my case, I'm pretty comfortable making media.
Yeah. It's funny. I've been talking to, a number of people who are sort of liberty-minded in the sort of various areas where people have gone here. So, like, I talked to, you probably know everybody that I'm about to mention, but Joel yep. about cryptocurrency, and I talked to yep. Keith about sort of, in the legislature. And it's interesting because almost everybody has, like, a series of influences. You know what I mean? It reminds me of, like, a band. Mm. And I guess probably that's typical in other types of like political philosophies, but it really struck me that there's like, I've got these two influences, and often it would be like a real deep, like a thinker and a writer, an economist and kind of like a firebrand, mm-hmm. Like somebody who would point towards, Keith Ammon mentioned, what was his name? Evil Irv, this Philadelphia, sort of libertarian shock jock that was on for years. And, he's like, I used to listen to this guy every time. And I was reading this thing. And I wonder if you see that that's a role that you've been able to play, or maybe just like that even a leaderless movement does need that megaphone.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a leaderless movement in that everybody can be a leader if they want to. And so there, of course, are people who are in the media, and I'm more of like the reluctant leader. I don't really much relish being in front of the camera. I'm just willing to do it. So there's a bunch of leaders, and they all kind of do their own thing. And then whoever wants to follow along can hop on board, we're doing a protest or something, you bring several signs so people that just want to show up can have one. You know, they don't have to actually take the time to make it themselves. So a good leader is somebody who can allow people to just kind of plug into whatever it is that they do and do it relatively easily and not have to really worry about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of like the actual activism, you know, tell me a little bit about, I mean, you don't have to sort of run through it all, I guess, because there's a lot that you guys have done.
Yeah.
But
I've got a whole 10 years worth of posts at freekeen.com. There's a lot there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, I guess I, on the one hand, because part of this story is to sort of broaden out and understand that like the Free State Project and the whole thing is not Robin Hooding. There is definitely a group of people that you know, who their experience with it is like having seen the Colbert Report video. And to that extent, I don't want to like overemphasize.
That. It was so funny.
It was funny. I mean, it was funny, but it's funny because it's like, in retrospect, it is entertaining and yet not also particularly illuminating.
No, it's just funny. It's just people being made fun of. And, you know, what's interesting, some of the response to that from some libertarians was like, you guys are ruining the movement. I can't tell you how many times I've been told that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I guess there is a part of me that's like, man, I wonder if there was a secret PR battle being waged. You know, like how do people feel like they did?
You mean on the Colbert Report?
No, I mean in terms of like what is the Free State Project? You know what I mean? Like if there are people that still think the Free State Project is just putting quarters and harassing meter maids, then like then there's been a failure of messaging in some way.
I don't think the Free State Project, I mean, I don't speak for them or anything like that, but I'm not even a member of the organization, but I don't think the Free State Project is a PR organization. They never put any effort into reaching out to media in New Hampshire. All they ever really did was try to recruit libertarians to move to New Hampshire, and they got 20,000, and they're pretty much done. They still exist, but they really just kind of exist to try to, I think right now all they're really doing is throwing their two yearly events and trying to encourage those people that said they were going to move to actually move.
Right, right. So you don't, you know, like you don't see that and or think like, oh man, I wish I could have changed the narrative a little bit.
Oh no, I really don't care about what people think about the Free State Project. I mean, ultimately, the goal is to move libertarians to New Hampshire, and that's something that's happening with or without the Free State Project at this point. In fact, I would say that we talk about on Free Talk Live how it's a wider New Hampshire freedom migration at this point of people who aren't interested in joining the Free State Project but still want to be around more libertarians, or people who, you know, don't much care for the Free State Project, or they don't, you know, join things in general. People who are liberty-minded really ought to come to New Hampshire. And of course, all of the successes that we've had, as you said, there's a, you know, a laundry list of them. Those are going to drive people here eventually if they're tired of losing. You know, if they get tired of all the failures of the libertarians where they live, then they can come here and actually have a chance at winning.
Mm. In terms of the activism, so there was the Robin Hooding, there is coplock.org. I get lost. And I could keep doing the research, but at the same time, like, what are you involved in and what is connected in what ways? Because there's a lot of different pieces, and they are obviously, as a Venn diagram, like there's overlap in terms of like, you know, activists who are involved in multiple things. But like, I sometimes get lost in just the separate amount of stuff.
Yeah, there's just so much to do. I mean, it's impossible for me to even know what it all is. I'm just out here in Keene, and I obviously hear more about what's happening out here than elsewhere. But I mean, you've got everything from political action, you know, people working to get elected, people working within the state house, like Daryl W. Perry's Liberty Lobby. He goes there and, you know, lobbies these state reps as a crowdsourced, maybe the first crowdsourced lobbyist. So there's all kinds of political action. You've got the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, which is reading every single piece of legislation and rating them and then scoring the state representatives on how they vote on these things. I mean, that's a tremendous level of hours that's being poured into just that one thing alone. You got all the cryptocurrency outreach and activism that's happening, which is what I'm focusing a lot of my time on besides my media outreach efforts. The cryptocurrency world is very, very interesting, and it's a great way to help kind of set the average person free, whereas people feel like you can't fight City Hall A lot of people are interested in getting wealthier, and certainly having cryptocurrency has helped a lot of people do that. So I think a bunch of activists have focused on that, at least out here in the Keene area these days. There certainly has been plenty of civil disobedience over time. That seems to have sort of fallen off the radar recently. Robin Hooding was hugely successful. That sort of more direct action, not really disobedience, but more like civil obedience, which was, of course, incredibly successful all the way up to the New Hampshire Supreme Court, where we were victorious. But that has sort of fallen off the radar because some activist projects kind of come and go over time as well. So what was happening 5 years ago isn't necessarily what's being focused on today. It's really a huge movement, and it's hard to get your thumb on all of it.
Yeah. Do you think that there's been a sort of evolution since that time in terms of like where the focus is, or maybe, you know, that sort of outside the system versus inside the system balance?
I think that all of it attracts different groups of people here. So the people that see the inside the system wins are going to come here, and they're going to get excited, and they're going to do that stuff. And people that aren't so enamored by working within the system will find other things that interest them, whether it be, like you mentioned, police accountability activism. You know, again, copblock.org has sort of fallen off the radar as a national organization. We definitely still have police accountability activists on the ground here in New Hampshire in various different ways. So all of that's really important. The continued media outreach is really important. And, of course, my show is just one of them. There are probably, you know, half a dozen or more shows of audio or video variety coming out of New Hampshire who are liberty friendly.
Gotcha. How did I didn't know the Robin Hooding thing. Well, I guess I did know, because didn't the city sued and then you won? How did that, like, what actually happened?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if I might, I've got a radio show that's coming in here at 4 o'clock. It's off. Hold on a second. Well, then give me one moment here. I'm going to have to. Apparently, the show is not on today.
Okay.
But I'll have to put them on refeed here shortly. So hang on a second here. Okay. All right. So the question was about Robin Hooding. What happened there?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a really interesting case. The Robin Hooders in Keene were saving thousands of people from getting parking tickets by putting coins in expired meters before the parking enforcers could reach them to write a ticket, and literally, you know, saving 5,000 to 8,000 people or something like that in a 1 year time frame, which, of course, on the average ticket payout in Keene, even though the ticket's $5, the average person pays $10 because they're late. So, you know, you take 5,000, we're being conservative here, 5,000 tickets saved. You're talking about $50,000 in revenue that the city normally is expecting to receive. They, you know, expect to write a certain amount of tickets every year. And the Robin Hooders really rained on their parade. So they decided to hire some fancy private attorneys and, you know, at a cost of God knows how much. We've yet to actually see those official numbers, but it's expected to be over $100,000 taxpayer dollars to file a civil lawsuit against six of the alleged Robin Hooders, one of whom was one of the founders of CopBlock.org, Pete Ayer, who never had Robin Hooded a day in his life. But nonetheless, he was sued as well. And so it was just this 3 year long court battle where we had a pro bono attorney, John Meyer out of Manchester, who just did an awesome job. He's one of the former head attorneys for the ACLU in New Hampshire and just a huge free speech guy. And he just creamed the city and their attorneys. It was amazing to watch. And we won at every single level at the courts. There was one brief moment where the Supreme Court kicked back one aspect to be reheard at the superior court level, which we, of course, were victorious on that, and victorious again at the final Supreme Court hearing. So free speech was vindicated in that particular case. The city was making outrageous allegations, claiming that we were threatening, intimidating, and harassing their employees, which, of course, was completely false and never proven at any point, despite the fact that they continued to tarnish our reputations with that statement in their public press releases and interviews with the media. It was just straight up lies, because if they had any evidence that we were harassing their employees, they would have arrested us and charged us with criminal harassment. There's, you know, laws against that.
So do you think that they're maybe using the word harassment, because you make a good point, which is that it's like a legal term for harassment. And then there's people using it to mean like behavior that they think is uncool. And they're conflating the two.
Hold that thought for one moment. I got to put this refeed on here. Hang on. Okay, all set. What was the question again? Sorry.
Well, I was just thinking, like, I mean, I hear your point to the degree that, you know, there is a legal term for assault or harassment, and it hasn't been met. But part of what they mean is that, like, the behavior seemed aggressive or uncool, and they're conflating the two.
Well, you know, they also use the terms, the quote is threatening, intimidating, and harassing. So that's, it's hard to confuse that, right? Like, that's pretty specific. And no threatening was going on. Certainly no intimidating or harassing. They never proved anything like that. They were just straight up lying. And so anyway, you know, we were victorious because what was said were things like critique. You know, somebody who might say that, hey, you know, I don't appreciate you stealing from people or threatening them to steal their cars. Because if anybody's doing threatening, it's the people who are working for the government. And that was always, you know, one of the points of some of the Robin Hooders in the streets was, you guys are the ones who are stealing. You're the ones who are threatening. Whenever you leave a ticket on somebody's car, that's a threat. That ticket says that if you don't pay up, then they're going to come and they're going to tow your car away. So they're going to steal people's cars. And we've seen it happen. I mean, one of the Robin Hooders saw them towing a single mother's car. You know, she's not doing so hot. She's trying to get the bills paid. She hasn't paid all her back bills with the city for her parking violation. So they decided to tow her car while she was at the library. I mean, yeah. So that's real. That's real threatening. That's real intimidating and harassing. But people excuse it because, well, it's the government and that it's okay when they do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So tell me a little bit about like the Shire Society, and I mean, because in some ways it seems like the Shire Society is very similar to the Free State Project, but different.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So the Shire Society was formed back in 2010. It actually started at the Free State Project's Porcupine Freedom Festival, where the people signing what was called the Shire Society Declaration, which is basically like a personal declaration of independence. And the Shire Society was formed to not have a board of directors, to not have a centralized controlling body, but just simply be this statement that was sort of this group worked on statement, and that dozens and dozens of people signed at that initial signing, and probably thousands have signed online or in real life since then. And so the idea is very simple, was let's have people who love liberty move to New Hampshire without any kind of organizational structure behind it. And it seems to have worked. There are a lot of folks who are interested in not being part of the Free State Project as an organization because the board of directors has made some controversial decisions. And as a result of that, I think that libertarians, a lot of them appreciate decentralization. There's even going to be a decentralized alternative to the Free State Project's camping event this year. There's something called ForkFest that's going to be happening the 5 days before the Free State Project's Porcupine Freedom Festival, which is known as ForkFest. So ForkFest in that it has forked off, it has split from the original path.
It's I like the name. ForkFest, yeah. ForkFest, ForkFest. There's a certain element of, like, if you're just coming into it, you know what I mean? It's like, It's a strange, I mean, I guess it makes sense that you're going to have all these sort of different ideas about how things should go down, or, you know, about creating the space that you want to create, you know, and the place that you want to live. But at the same time, it ends up being it, like, there's the impression a little bit of almost infighting, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that, I mean, it's just, it seems to be a thing with people. You know, once groups get to be a certain size, you tend to have schisms, you tend to have these forks, movements go off and break off in different directions. You can look at religions, where, of course, there have been all kinds of you know, schisms and such. And the Libertarian Party, of course, at the national level has had that. I suspect all the other political parties have it as well. And so what you see happening in New Hampshire with whatever various different schisms there have been over the years is just, that's okay. It's just the way things are. And I embrace it personally. I don't feel bad about it. I don't hold a grudge. I think it's great that we have so many different prongs to this movement. To me, it's the indicator of a growing, even though it's ugly and messy sometimes, a growing and healthy movement.
And to be honest, everybody I've talked to has said the same sort of thing, which is this, you know, the willingness to persuade and be persuaded is at the heart of the liberty movement, regardless of where you fall down. But, you know, Carla and other people in the Free State Project weren't like a little frustrated or annoyed that you created the Shire Society during a like sponsored Free State Project event?
Oh, I imagine some of them signed the document. I mean, I don't know who you'd have to actually go and look at the signatures. I don't know who all is on there because the Shire Society doesn't actually collect any kind of membership rolls. If somebody signs it publicly, that's their choice. If somebody prints it out and signs it privately, that's their choice as well. But no, I mean, it was very, very popular at that time. I think people saw the benefit in having a decentralized thing that people could still kind of join and be a part of. And it was really more about not creating an alternative to the Free State Project, although that was obviously something that it could have been and ultimately was. It was more about just kind of having this Declaration of Independence for people to sign on a personal level. So, you know, the U.S. Declaration of Independence was declaring independence from one of the states, but they created another state. This one is kind of declaring independence from the whole idea of the state, the idea of this coercive, violent, monopoly on violence organization that is essentially a group of strangers, mostly, who are telling other people how to live their lives. And so that was really the motivation behind the Shire Society, I think.
And in terms of the Shire Free Church, that's sort of like another piece of the Shire Society in terms of organizing itself and
I would say so. The Shire Free Church is also a very decentralized thing. So if you go to church.shiresociety.com, you'll see it's an interfaith church. So people of all faiths are welcome, as long as they are of peace. So we don't want any warmongers in the Shire Free Church. But otherwise, let's bring people together. Let's talk about our different views on things and come together where we possibly can. And of course, peace is that uniting factor. It's also decentralized in that there is no central board or authority within the church. Each church minister can decide who to recognize as a fellow minister. So if somebody claims that they are a Shire Free Church minister, but they're talking about violence, I would not recognize that person, if they're talking about aggressive violence, I would not recognize that person as a minister, as a fellow minister in the church. Yeah. So that's, you know, again, decentralization being very, very important there. There's no one person who's in charge. And the same thing is going to be true of the camping festival this summer is nobody's in charge of that. We're just calling it Fork Fest on the radio. Other people might call it something different.
You know, it makes me think of, you know, you pointed towards like the board of the Free State Project had made some decisions that weren't super popular. And it's like they were sort of trying to deal with this tension of the philosophy that was part of the movement, but also this like brand or idea of a thing and wanting to have some sort of limits on what it is and can be. And so it sounds like a lot of what you've done in what you're sort of working towards is taking some of those limits away, you know, sort of getting rid of the structure that is going to at some point naturally impose some limitation or some label.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a fair way to look at that. I think that boards are they tend to be inefficient, and I say that as somebody who's been on and is on a couple of boards. I'm on the Cheshire TV board here in Keene and have been for quite a long time. So I'm familiar with how boards operate, and they tend to be bureaucratic, they tend to be slow, they tend to be political. And, getting away from that, I think, is ultimately a good thing. That's not to say that centralization doesn't have its benefits. I mean, certainly, for instance, in the world of camping festivals, the Pork Fest, the Free State Project event, they got all kinds of big name speakers that they can afford to pay to have speak there. And our event, if you want to speak, you're going to have to bring your own podium, or you're going to have to bring your own PA system or whatever. So, you know, will anybody be speaking? I have no idea. I'm not in charge.
It sounds a little bit like the origins. I was talking to someone who said the very first pork fests were, there wasn't workshops. It was just kind of like people getting together and camping.
That's right. That's very, very similar. I wasn't there for the very first Pork Fest, but I did hear about that. And so this will have that sort of same decentralized flavor where everybody can kind of create whatever it is that they want other people to experience, which I think is there's a beauty in that. And, you know, when you look at decentralization when it comes to money, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Bitcoin and cryptocurrency has been so hot within the libertarian movement. And arguably the founder, the creator of Bitcoin, the Satoshi Nakamoto, the anonymous, he or she or they or whoever it was, they seemed very, very libertarian in their philosophy as well. So to decentralize the power of money out of the hands of governments and banks and put it into the hands of the people, wow, what a huge paradigm shift, and something that, you know, I'm so grateful that we have, because as I mentioned, it's one of the activism focuses out here in Keene. It's one of the reasons why Keene and Portsmouth are the two basically hot spots for cryptocurrency usage in real life. If you look at the coin map, coinmap.org, which shows like local businesses that accept Bitcoin all around the globe, Keene and Portsmouth actually have a higher concentration per capita than the major cities around the world. So that shows how effective just a small group of activists can be. And, you know, we've gone from smoking pot in Central Square to helping people get wealthy here in Keene, which, you know, it's wonderful when you can give a $10 tip to somebody who's running a barbecue stand a year ago, who then gets on Facebook and says, yeah, I got a $10 tip from somebody in Bitcoin, and now it's worth over $113. You know, it's fun to be able to do that for folks now.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
I was sort of fascinated when I was getting into this and thinking about, oh, you know, I bet a lot of liberty-minded folks have made quite a bit of money because they were early adopters on this thing that everybody else then sort of jumped on later, and you know, as the price has gone up. Although Joel said something about, you know, I mean, I'm actually using this stuff. He's like, so I, you know, it's not the same as the sort of speculative bit.
Yeah, it's been really great, you know, for those people who did happen to get in on the early end of this, because a lot of libertarians did. And that's, I think, in the long run going to be a real game changer, because ultimately libertarians for a long time have been very, very poor, at least the ones that were moving up here. They didn't have two nickels to rub together. And I think that's because a lot of the kind of the single males came up first, because they didn't have a whole lot holding them down. I think we're seeing more people with businesses and families making the move up here nowadays. But regardless, a lot of those guys did pretty well with cryptocurrency. And last year, of course, the value of Bitcoin and others went up by like 10 times. So, you know, you start seeing that happen a few more times. You're talking about a bunch of libertarian millionaires being here in New Hampshire and being politically active well. So, you know, politicians tend to respond to that, right? So you're going to see, it was already something that politicians were concerned with, because you want the libertarians, if they're going to be working for somebody, to be working for your campaign and not against it. And certainly now with some more money to burn, I think that'll be even more the case.
Yeah. So in terms of the board again, you said there was unpopular decisions. Is this related to like who's in and who's out?
There were a few people that have been kicked out, but they've made other decisions as well that have been controversial. Like when Edward Snowden, there was this controversy with one of my bloggers at Free Keene, Garrett Ian, who's based out of Concord. Actually, I don't know if you know Garrett, but he had secretly recorded video of the Edward Snowden appearance that the Free State Project had at one of their events, and they had asked people to not record. He did it anyway and went ahead and published that. And of course, I supported him in doing that as you know, the person who operates Free Keene. I don't tell my bloggers what to do or what they can't do generally. So I did not oppose what he did, and so there was all this controversy over that. You know, so there's always been these decisions that have been made, and because I've been as independent as I can be, I've called the Free State Project out on a number of them over the years on my blog at Free Keene. So even when I was a member of the organization, I was still very critical of them, and they never really liked that very much.
How did things sort of break up? with you guys?
So they broke up with us, and they had had an agreement with Free Talk Live for years to cover their various different events. Essentially, it came down to certain people who – this is my understanding of it, right? So I'm sure there's – I'm sure different sides to this. But there were certain people who were volunteers for the Free State Project who were very upset by some of the types of activism, like the in the streets, civil disobedience kind of activism over the years. And they just didn't like sort of for Ian Freeman and that the brand of keen activism, I guess, that that had happened. And then they also didn't like some of the opinions that I've said on the radio, which are fairly libertarian opinions on things like age of consent. And so they made a big kerfuffle about it, I guess, behind the scenes. And the Free State Project board, after reaching their 20,000 signers, curiously, and after awarding a popularly voted Lifetime Achievement Award to me and my co-host Mark Edgington, who is, by the way, he wants me to tell you that he's been a New Hampshire Public Radio sustainer for years. He just passed me a note. Anyway.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. He says thanks. So right after their Liberty Forum event in 2016, which they had the very first ever and they've never done it since, awards ceremony, we won the Lifetime Achievement Award for spreading the message because, again, we've been their number one recruiter ever since forever. And 3 weeks after, they kicked me out of the project and prohibited Free Talk Live from broadcasting from any of their events from that point forward. And they claimed that it was all about my opinions about age of consent.
Was that, I mean, were things happening sort of at the same time so that lines up at least as far as an excuse goes?
No, not at all. My opinions on that have been known in public for many, many years since I'm, you know, a radio personality and we talk about all kinds of issues. So there was nothing new there. It was just, you know, convenient timing that they hit 20,000 and then a matter of weeks later, decided to kick us to the curb. And again, I don't have any personal hard feelings about it. My co-host does. He's still holding a grudge, but I don't hold a grudge. If I see Carla, I usually hug her, and you know, it's always good to see her. And she was one of the board members who voted in favor of kicking me out. They had to do what they had to do to make certain people happy within their organization, and that's their business.
Do you find that that even within the movement that, you know, age of consent, for example, that there are these like third rail topics where, okay, you know, you don't have to worry about talking about legalization. Everybody's going to be on board. You don't have to worry about talking about a lot of tax issues in terms of lowering regulation or lowering taxes. But then there are these other areas where you are willing to have a conversation that people even within the liberty movement are sometimes not ready to have or not willing to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt that on Free Talk Live, my radio show, we've certainly had conversations that would make a lot of people very uncomfortable. And there are a number of topics on which libertarian viewpoints are controversial to even libertarians. And libertarians will debate about those things. And in the case of organizations with boards of directors, with politics being played, they, you know, feel like they have to make certain decisions.
So if you were sitting around a campfire at Porkfest, you know, prior to this, you might have been able to have the same conversation. But once you put it on the air, you think it's a different story.
Yeah, I would say that people would behave differently about something that they perceive will reflect publicly upon their particular viewpoint. And again, not everybody within the libertarian movement holds the same viewpoint. So, you know, I think one of the divisions that you might see with the issue of age of consent, at least that I've observed, is that some libertarians seem to believe that they own their children, and then others don't. You know, others say, hey, you know, the peaceful parents, for instance, they won't raise their hand to their kid at all. They, for instance, believe that their children should be able to make decisions for themselves, whatever the consequences might be. I don't have kids. I'm not interested in having them personally. But, you know, people have different, I would say, starkly different opinions on some of these things.
Do you mean like this is a case where sort of whose liberty is at the fore differs? You know, I mean, that's like what people are arguing about sometimes. Like abortion has been listed as a topic where libertarians can still, while faithfully sort of feeling the way they feel differ pretty drastically on the topic itself, because, you know, one might be talking about the liberty of the mother to be able to, you know, to have an abortion. And then somebody else might be thinking about the definition of a person when they're born, and then say, like, well, that person has rights too.
I would say that most libertarians on that issue, and yeah, that is a divisive one, abortion, most of them hopefully would not agree that the government should get involved. So, like, the government shouldn't subsidize it and they shouldn't prohibit it. So even the ones that disagree with the act of abortion hopefully will not advocate for the government's prohibition, because they should know better. Yeah, I mean, libertarians have the whole range of views on, you know, everything from a fetus is a human being to a fetus is, you know, just a thing, as a zygote. It's, you know, not the same thing as a human. It's one of those things that I don't think people will ever agree on.
Yeah. So when the split happened, which was, you said, was actually just after they got the 20,000.
Yeah, that was a split with Free Talk Live. There have been other, you know, a few other people being kicked out over the years, like Christopher Cantwell for alleged violence advocating back in like 2012. They originally banned one of the guys who actually organized Porkfest once for trying to copyright Porkfest or something like that. So there have been other issues.
Yeah. So when that happened, I mean, was there a wing of people that were like, man, this sucks? And they also, you know, I mean, like, Was it like a continental shift, like California breaking off the United States, or was it like you and Free Talk Live just kind of like not going to Porkfest?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to say, I wouldn't ever claim to be so important that there would ever be some sort of continental shift or whatever. But there was a notable, I would say, decline from what people told me in the attendance of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. Because, again, it wasn't just, you know, what they did to Ian Freeman. They also banned the show from being there because, you know, they could have banned me and kept my other co-hosts and had them go. But, they banned the show. And so some people were mad about that, and they decided they weren't going to attend. I never asked anybody to do that, just, you know, for the record. I actually posted a blog shortly after my banning on Free Keen saying, hey, you know, I'm not allowed there, but you should still go to Porkfest, because it was still, you know, a great libertarian event that if somebody had never been to before, they wouldn't know what they were missing, because there were some other things that had happened at Porkfest that were no longer happening there, like Buzz's Big Gay Dance Party, which is kind of, you know, this wonderful, fun, debaucherous kind of party. And that wasn't happening there anymore. So, you know, I'm sure there was a few different reasons why people decided they weren't going to go. But some people did express, hey, you know, I'm frustrated by this decision, Free State Project. I'm not going to attend your event. And again, I did not ask anyone to do that at all. But they did. Some of them did. And those who did attend the event said the turnout was down.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much down? I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah. I don't really care.
You know, so you sort of, we talked a little bit about things like shifting since then, and, you know, whether or not that's sort of a real shift. I guess there's a part of me that wonders, you know, the longer you're here and other people that are activists here, the less likely maybe people are going to start thinking of, you know, free stater as the term. And really just you're a person who has just as much a right to, you know, stand up. I mean, you always did, obviously, but like people are more willing to accept that you're an actual community member and not somebody who's just arrived and is changing.
Well, I think that anytime, wherever you are, you've got outsiders, the flatlanders, as some might say, you're going to have that pushback no matter what their particular political viewpoint is. And there are certainly plenty of people in the state legislature, certainly many of the Keene state reps, for instance, who were not born in New Hampshire. You know, they came here and brought their big government ways with them from Connecticut or wherever else it is that they've come from. If it means something, my dad was born in New Hampshire, but you know, regardless, I am here, and a lot of us are here, and we're, you know, we've put down roots and donate time and money to local organizations and things like that. So, you know, I'm a supporter of the 100 Nights Homeless Shelter here and have been for many years. The Free Keene and the Shire Free Church had sponsored some of their dances in the past, and give to them monthly, for instance. So, you know, there's definitely some things that we're doing here that I think are very, very good. We donated, the Shire Free Church donated some property to a local mosque. To a couple of folks who came up here, brought their family up from Tennessee, and have opened up the doors on the region's first full-time mosque. So, I mean, there's some really cool stuff that's happening up here that we're able to do now because we've been able to put those roots down. And, you know, we've had success with things like cryptocurrency. So we've got some more wealth at the church's disposal, which we didn't have, you know, a decade ago. So,
yeah. And, you know, I mean, in terms of, I mean, like thinking about the Free State Project as a news item, you know, it's kind of not that I've been in the business long enough to actually sort of witness this, but I was talking to Dan Barrack, who's our news director. And, you know, before he was here at NHBR, he was at Concord Monitor, I think. And so, you know, he's sort of like, he was there when New Hampshire was picked, and he's kind of been through this. And because of the nature of the project, there was these like moments where media paid attention. And then would kind of drift away until the next thing happened, you know, sure. Whether it was like a specific set of activism, or it was like, you know, you hit the 20,000, you trigger the move. Like, that's a news event.
Right.
You know, the world pays attention and then goes off being reactive towards other things.
Right.
And so I'm sort of fascinated by this idea that, you know, it's been a couple of years since then, and the project continues in the sense that people are still moving. And to your point, regardless of whether or not it's Free State Project or something else, you know, there's still a lot of like liberty-minded folks that are coming to New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. But there isn't that thing that the news is going to pay attention to. And so it's like potentially the biggest change is still to come in terms of how the state is affected as a culture, or in terms of legislature and you know, policy. And yet, like, I wonder if it's going to be a quiet change.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that most of the people who are moving to New Hampshire for things like the Free State Project or the New Hampshire Freedom Migration in general, these are going to be people who are going to come here. They're going to get a job. They're going to open a business. They're going to, you know, get involved in community organizations, and that's what most of them have been doing. It's the stories that the keen activism that, for the most part, has garnered, I would say, the majority of the headlines over the years, because it's been in the streets, it's been civil disobedience, and it's been very, very visible. I mean, even still today, we're still dominating with activism as far as cryptocurrency. And the reason why Portsmouth is a hot spot is because one of my guys from Keene, Derek J. Freeman, who, you know, we made a movie about him. There's a great movie called Derek J.'s Victimless Crime Spree. And that's a lot of fun to watch. It's free to watch online at victimlesscrimespree.com. But he moved out to Portsmouth, and they opened up the Free State Bitcoin shop, and they're doing constant outreach. They're about to open up a Bitcoin university out there, and they've hit the streets real hard and have done a great job recruiting people. So it's that kind of in the streets, get out there, do stuff activism. That's what makes the headlines. You know, that's what's exciting. That's what's sexy. That's the sizzle for the news. And so, you know, we've always been good at that out here in Keene. And some people don't like that, you know, because they do want to have that integration. They don't want people asking them questions. They want to kind of hide who they are. And, you know, if that's the way they want to live their life, then that's certainly their choice. But that's not the way I do it.
Yeah. 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 I would say that generally people probably know you way more than they know Jason Sorens.
Yeah, I would imagine you're right about that. Well, I mean, he didn't even move up here until within the last several years. So he wasn't even one of the earliest movers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's not that I want to be, just to interrupt, it's not that I want to be known or whatever. A lot of what I've done is simply reported on what others have done. But the fact that I'm reporting on it gets me blamed for it. It's like, oh, I'm the guy with a microphone. I have a video camera. I have a blog to put things on. So therefore, when somebody else goes and gets arrested for, you know, possession of marijuana or something like that in the park, well, it must be Ian Freeman's doing, because people seem to think that libertarians are structured like the police or like most of the organizations, this sort of top-down pyramidal structure where one person is in charge. And that's just not the case. I mean, while there are organizations within the liberty movement, like I mentioned earlier, the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance or the New Hampshire Jury Association, You know, there are certainly boards and structures of those organizations, but Ian Freeman is not in charge of those things. I'm on the board of directors of NH Jury, but that doesn't mean I'm in charge, and there's a bunch of other projects out there that I have nothing whatsoever to do with. But if I report on it, then all of a sudden it's all my fault.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, in some ways, doesn't it show you that the perception means so much? Because it's like when I came into this job, I thought, you know, I started as a board op. So I started off like reading the news and weather, but I didn't write it. And I was just getting, you know, stuff from the AP and the Wire. And then I started producing. So I was just like, you know, writing fluffy interviews for a different host to read. I didn't think about myself as a journalist at all. And in fact, I would sort of have like pushed that away because I didn't feel qualified. And I was just figuring out, you know, what the ethics were and like what you can and can't do. And I was, you know, learning in the moment. And then at some point I had that realization that it doesn't matter, because if people perceive me as a journalist, then they'll hold me to a standard regardless of whether or not I feel qualified for it. And in the same way, it's like, you might not be the official leader, but if everybody thinks that you are, then like you almost end up taking on that role regardless, or at least the responsibility of it.
Yeah, and it's it can be a bit of a burden at times. But yeah, I'm not in charge. You know, it's important to remind people of that. And every time I get the chance, it's like I don't know half of what's going on. I probably don't even know a tenth of what's going on in this movement up here. And I love that it's such a wide ranging movement, and there are so many different people doing so many different things. And I'm happy to comment on them if I know what's going on. And that is one of the things I'm good at, is I can speak pretty eloquently. I've had practice at it. And so that's what my role is to be a communicator, not just to within New Hampshire, but also outside of New Hampshire. You know, that's why we have this radio show and the Free Keen blog, is so people can see what's happening here. So libertarians all around the globe can know at least a fraction, because that's really all I can report on, of what's going on, and get excited about it, and then possibly move here.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, how many listeners do you have? Like, what's the national syndication?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have getting close to 180 radio stations, AM and FM, coast to coast in the United States. And it's, you know, hard to estimate how many people are listening to the radio. We certainly have gotten some ratings from some of our stations over time, but for the most part, we don't look at numbers. So, you know, I can point you to all the radio stations we have, and we can take a shot in the dark about how many listeners might be listening over a 1 week's time frame, and maybe a few hundred thousand is the answer there. You know, it's really not much more than a shot in the dark based on market size and whatever else we can look at. Online, obviously, we can get more statistics. So each podcast for Free Talk Live gets maybe around 2,000 to 3,000 downloads. And we do, of course, 7 per week, so 7 days a week. So it's not, you know, going to blow anybody out of the water. I suspect the comedians like Adam Carolla get a lot more, but I don't know. And again, I don't sit around looking at statistics and comparing things. To me, the idea is to just get the word out about freedom in as many ways as possible, and as effectively as possible, and as affordably as possible. So we've got satellite channels as well with what are called free-to-air satellite, which broadcasts over sub-Saharan Africa and North and Central America. So I don't know how many people listen to that. There's no way to measure it. So I have,
I
have no idea.
we have this, I forget the details, the PPM books and something else. Is like, we have these ways that we measure.
Is there,
you know,
PPM in New Hampshire?
Well,
I think Manchester's too small of a market for that.
Yeah. So I forget the details, but I remember once, you know, I mean, we get these like quarterly presentations from during all staff meetings where they tell us, you know, like what the listenership of is.
Yeah.
And if you ask like where the numbers come from, it's just like, you know, there's these people that like do these self diaries, I mean, you're just like, okay, these numbers are not trustworthy.
The diary company's name used to be Arbitron, so I mean, it's like the word arbitrary is built right in there.
That's so true.
Yeah,
that's true. Yep. So I don't know, how's it? I mean, it's kind of a stupid question to say, like, how do you feel about the Free State Project?
I think it was a success. I think the Free State Project is an absolute success. They were successfully able to get 20,000 people to say they were going to move here. I think everybody knows no way were 20,000 going to actually move. If you end up getting 10 of them, I would say that would be a tremendous success. Getting 5 would be really awesome. And we know that at least a couple thousand have moved. So, I mean, ultimately, as far as getting libertarians to concentrate in one place, it was always something people that, you know, had talked about over the years, I guess. But the Free State Project was the first time and the only time that it's really ever been a success. There have been a lot of imitators, a lot of them, a lot of, you know, sort of wannabe Free State Project things have popped up over the years in various different places, and they have all failed miserably. The Free State Project is the key success, and it's something that I think the libertarians here are going to build off of in the future. I mean, you can look at it from so many different ways, whether it be the successful civil disobedience that we've had that has garnered millions of dollars in free press attention, and has gotten people talking about issues, to the political successes where libertarians have been elected as Republicans and Democrats across New Hampshire and have done a lot of hard work within the state house to try to stop some bad legislation and try to put some pro-freedom friendly legislation in place. And there have been countless successes there. And of course, the Free State Project brought in this solid group of cryptocurrency people, because libertarians tend to be into alternatives, and we're you know, seeing incredible growth in that area. So I think from any aspect you look at it, it was a tremendous success. Is it a failure if all 20,000 don't move? No way.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Ian. Oh, you know, yeah. I never had you introduce yourself. Sure. Can you just give me the, you know, give me the cocktail introduction?
I'm Ian Freeman. I'm one of the hosts of Free Talk Live and the founder of FreeKeen.com.
Awesome. This is the part where I try to think if there's anything I missed, but, you know.
You can always, you know, call me back if you need to.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I'll let you know when this is going to go. I think it's going to be a couple weeks.
Awesome. Yeah, shoot me an email. I appreciate it.
Yeah, most definitely.
Thanks, dude.
All right. Thanks.
Have a great day.
You too.